Good evening. How very nice it is to be here this evening. But then again, I'm from Rotherham, so it's nice to be anywhere.
Life.
It's always been too much. And not enough.
Still with him, are you?
Don't wind me up!
Of course you are.
Are you angry, Bob? You seem angry.
Hello and welcome to the Matt's Movie Reviews Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Perkovich, and this is episode number 147. Releasing in Australian cinemas on the 26th of July is Funny Cow, a gritty comedic drama that follows the life of an inspiring female comedian, played by Maxine Peake, as she develops her craft touring the working men's clubs of the 70s and 80s. Confronting the ignorant notion that women aren't funny, Funny Cow proves to be a powerful, at times shocking and darkly funny exploration into a time and place where women, especially female comedians, fought for their right to stand on the stage and tell their story. Joining me today to talk about Funny Cow is the film's director, Adrian Shergold. Adrian, I thank you very much for joining me on the Matt's Movie Reviews Podcast.
I'm looking forward to it. It's a pleasure to be on.
Adrian, when did you first find out about the project and what was it that made you want to direct it?
Kevin Proctor, the producer, sent me a script probably quite a few years ago, to be honest, and we tried to get it off the ground. But what really excited me about it is Tony Pitts is a Yorkshireman who's brash and brave and bold with his writing, and he doesn't write with any real sort of structure. He writes almost like it's a poem coming out of his head. So there isn't any absolutely what one would describe as act one, act two, act three as in a screenplay. It just actually just comes at you, and in a way it was never in any specific order. He sort of wrote scenes and then put them into I just put them on the page, and then in some ways you felt like he may have dropped the script at some point and then picked it up, and it was all in different order. So it was like trying to get your way through a puzzle when I first read it. So it didn't quite start where it started, and it didn't quite end where it ended. So in a way, when we started to shoot it in a very organic way, so that in some ways, I, at the point of shooting, I wasn't sure whether this was going to be the first scene or this was going to be the last scene of the film. So it was an enjoyable experience shooting it, but it was also a real pleasure when I read it, because it was brave and daring and dangerous, really. That's what really excited me about it.
It's interesting you were saying that, because I was watching the film a couple of days ago. I noticed that shifting timeline. It goes from past to present and back again. So that was all in the script from the beginning.
Well, it wasn't quite. I mean, in some ways, there wasn't really, what happens with Tony, he tends to write almost like a splurge of writing. I mean, he says he wrote it in a couple of hours. That's not quite true, but basically, he wrote a scene about the kid, then he wrote a scene about her when she was older, and then he wrote a scene about her doing an act, then he wrote a scene about her brother, then he wrote... So, in some ways, when we finished shooting it, I spent the first 2 weeks with an assembly editor just trying to get the thread of the scenes so they had some sort of linear, some sort of understanding for an audience. And I put those little chapters in, because this is all little snapshots of our life. It's not, you don't follow a whole thing through. Sometimes we just follow one scene through and then something else completely starts. So in a way, I put those little chapters in, the next bit and another bit, so that somehow the audience would hopefully join in and catch up with the film.
The other thing that I found really interesting was that the lead character is only referenced by her stage name as opposed to a real name, per se. Was that something that was always there from the beginning as well?
That was always there from the beginning. She was always just called Funny Cow. Mm. And when she was a kid, she was called Funny Calf. And that was absolutely in Tony's writing. That's what he wanted to do. He never wanted to have a real name for her.
I read in an interview with Tony Pitt that he wrote Funny Cow with Maxine Peake in mind for that role.
Yes, he did. I think they met on a job. They were doing a television series called Red Riding, and they met, and they got on really well, and he talked a lot about comedy and about comedians. And there is an English comedian called Marty Kane, she's now dead, who around that time did try and break into that world, and she obviously, there was an element of Marty Kane in it, even though it's nothing to do with Marty Kane's life. And then he wrote it, and I think he just rang Maxine up and said, "Would you come and read it?" And I think he took her out on the moor somewhere near Hebden Bridge, and read it while he just wandered around waiting for her to finish it, and that's how that sort of happened. And then she was always going to be Funny Cow. That was it. And she's a fantastic actress, and I'd worked with her before, so I was really delighted it was going to be Maxie.
She delivers a very powerful performance here. As you said, you have worked with her before. With a demanding role like this one, though, that asks so much of any actor, what was it like on this movie?
Yeah. Sorry?
What was it like working with Maxine with this performance?
She was fantastic to work with. She's really, really intense and clever, and she's sort of charismatic as well. I mean, you know, Max is now 40-something, and actually we knew we were going to sort of dodge around with the years for her, so we're going to try and go through sort of 20 years of her life as a performer. But she has a great ability to actually, she has a real sense of what she's doing, and she's really done her homework. So she's worked it out and got an advanced thought process going on. But in some ways, sometimes she had to work on the back foot and had to try and work very quickly on certain things and get responses from people in some ways, especially with the audience and the act. And some of the act, obviously, is very much 70s comedy, which is, you know, a lot of it's misogynist and racist. But it was part of that time. It was part of what was going on in the UK in those clubs at that time.
Yep.
So that had to be part of the story. You couldn't avoid it. You couldn't try and clean it up.
Yep.
It had to be what it was.
Yeah, most definitely. I find it very interesting that there is this notion that behind every comedian there's a certain darkness, there's a wellspring of despair that they draw upon. Adrian, you've been in the entertainment industry for quite a long time. Is that something that you have come across with comedic actors, that they have a certain darkness in them?
I think comedians tend to have a very dark side. I think it's I work with Craig Cash and Caroline Ahern, and both of them, you know, they're great fun to be with, but there's a very dark side with them as well about their comedy and about their humour. And in a way, Tony is a sort of, he's a Yorkshire Woody Allen. He's got angst, lots of angst and lots of worries and lots of concerns. And, in his writing is that sort of darkness as well. And I think Maxine understood that. I mean, Maxine as a person isn't like that, but there is, in those people you meet who did that comedy stuff, seems to be a very sort of hidden dark side in them that you know. When I was working with Craig Cash, you know, we were doing a little comedy thing on TV, and each day we'd go to the cutting room and we'd start off laughing, and then we'd end up being in very dark places talking about the humour and whether it's going to work and whether it does work, and then he'd get really in his cups. And in a way, Tony as a writer is like that as well. So a lot of that poured into Funny Cow, and I think that's what Maxine, we wanted to get that hanging on to life as well, and a survivor, and a real survivor.
Adrian, you've previously dealt with material that have very dark themes. Fiona's Story, for example, that dealt with very dark subject matter. Funny Cow, though, you have to deal with very strong depictions of domestic violence on one side, and then there are moments of comedy in the stand-up scenes on the other side. How do you strike the balance between the two and not let one engulf the other?
It was sort of in the writing that I couldn't, you know, it's sort of the writing let me do that to a degree. You could actually switch from one thing to the other. But obviously there was an element where you had to, we weren't trying to make something that was like a Ken Loach film or a Tony Garnett film. We were trying to make a film that is slightly surreal. And in a way, those moments and those changeovers and those splits between her being a kid and then the older Funny Cow sort of allowed us to happen without getting too overwhelmed in one story or the other. It's interesting because I once described it as it's like the film's like travelling in a tumble dryer. You know, you don't know where you're going to be bumped next. And one minute you're sort of you think you know what you're watching, and then suddenly it turns on its head. And that's what I loved about the script and loved about the film.
I find it very curious that Tony, having written the film, also stars as Bob, who is the spouse of Funny Cow, a very harsh character. What's it like directing the screenwriter?
It's quite, well, interestingly, what I found with Tony is he sometimes doubts his own writing. So having written something, he suddenly has he gets into a quandary about it, and so he almost doesn't trust his own writing, but in a way I made him trust his own writing. The strange thing about it was, you know, he had to trust it and not try and so suddenly change it or try and, you know, in a way it was, he wasn't difficult to direct because he sort of took on the role that what he was playing was Bob, and he sort of seemed to be able to forget other things, but sometimes he'd just doubt his own dialogue for Bob, not Funny Cow's dialogue or Paddy's dialogue or something like that. So sometimes that would be my only problem with him, is just trying to say, look, believe in what you've got and what you've said and what you've written, and don't try and change it at the last minute.
A screenwriter who doubts his own writing, is that something of a rarity?
I think it's, yes, probably it is. At some point there was a conversation about whether he was going to play Bob. But he really, I just knew we had to let him play Bob because Bob, you know, Bob's the alter ego of Tony, really. He's the other side of that character. So in a way, it was perfect. It is, you don't get lots of screenwriters who actually are acting. But what he did, he just took on the role. He was going to be an actor. So he only came in when he was called. He didn't actually turn up the other days and watch other scenes. He just kept out of it and let me get on with the film, which for me was a joy. And he was a joy to work with.
You come from a very extensive background, TV, film. I want to just talk about your TV work. In my opinion, I think the emergence of TV as this powerhouse form of entertainment that now rivals feature films is one of the biggest kind of stories in entertainment over the last decade or so. How have you seen the arrival, the burgeoning, the evolution of TV and TV filmmaking over the last decade or so that has created TV into this new kind of form, I wouldn't say new form of entertainment, but a form of entertainment that rivals even going to the cinema?
I think it's been extraordinary. It's basically, Netflix and Amazon, all those things that suddenly are making dramas, and, and America and, and the Europeans and the Swedes, and we suddenly had stuff on television which wouldn't have been palatable in some ways. It seems the boundary has been pushed. The only frustration side of that is sometimes there's so many people trying to interfere with it. But in a way, Breaking Bad, things like that, suddenly really turned, for me, TV on its head. It suddenly said you can almost do anything on TV as well as you can do it in the film. The thing about films, obviously, they have a longevity. They have much more sort of life to them. And somehow TV tends to be a bit like, fish and chips, and you throw the paper away at the end of it and that's it. So from a director's point of view, I love films because I can live with them for much, much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see that some television is really groundbreaking, and the best of television, the best stuff that's coming out, some of those Netflix projects, and where they're not tied up in. I mean, I think the BBC is still a very good drama maker, but it tends to, if it's doing its own stuff, it tends to still stick in the old way of doing it, and is not so adventurous and ambitious as other new companies that are coming out. I think it's just there's been such an overwhelming market for this stuff now suddenly, and it's really special and exciting, and it means that the best has to be the best. So I embrace it. But for the last 2 years, 3 years, I've just been working solely on films because
yep.
I've enjoyed the fact that it's got longevity, and you spend a lot more time with it, and you feel much more personal with it, like I did with Funny Cow.
Is there a different type of satisfaction seeing your film on a cinema screen as compared to a TV screen?
Yeah, there is, and I think the thing about it is you sort of, the joy of film is you've got a sort of, the fact that you sat down in the cinema and the lights go down, you actually have invested in it. So sometimes the trouble with TV is people are so worried about it having a hook and keeping the audience there, and in some ways you can. For me, the best thing about cinema is actually the audience has invested in sitting down and watching something, so you can have a slower burn to it. You can actually let it develop more than you can with TV. Sometimes with TV, you almost have to get to the nitty-gritty almost straight away. I mean, sometimes they do it beautifully, but other times you feel like it's just being pushed because executives or producers are worried that the audience are going to go off and make a cup of coffee or a cup of tea.
Earlier this year, there was some controversy in regards to the Cannes Film Festival refusing to screen any films from Netflix because they are, by regards to TV company. As yourself, as a filmmaker, as a director of TV, what do you think of the stance that the Cannes Film Festival made there?
I think Cannes will have to change their mind to a degree. I mean, I think Mudbound was a film that was made by, I can't remember what it was made by, Amazon or Netflix, but it was an extraordinary film.
Yeah.
And it would be, for me, it's a shame if you suddenly decide that something can't be that. There's a sort of snobbery sometimes in film about what's film and what's television. I think sometimes, you know, you can't be that way. I mean, Mike Leigh's just made a film called Peterloo, which was financed by Amazon. And it's going to Venice and it's going to Toronto, I think. But it didn't, you know, I think, again, Cannes didn't take it. Maybe because it was funded by Amazon. I don't know. I don't know the full story of it. I've no idea. But You feel that might be the case. So I think Cannes probably being a little bit unwise, because I think other people are realising you've got to look at the market and get the best out of whatever market it's coming from.
Adrian, last question. So Funny Cow is set within the periods of the 70s and 80s, looks at the attitudes towards women in entertainment. And we like to think a lot of that stuff is behind us. But it was only 10 or 11 years ago where Christopher Hitchens wrote an article in Vanity Fair that talked about why women aren't funny, and that created a huge kind of furor. You've been in the industry for a long time. How have you seen in the last 10 years and the last 20 years attitudes changing in regards to women in film, women in TV, and how much more do you think there is to go to make sure there is more equality within the industries?
I think it's a long way to go still, to be honest. And I think it's not just about women, it's about, you know, it's about the problem with the film industry in a way is you sometimes have to be wealthy to be able to make films, to have to be able to wait for them. So the industry tends to be full of people. I mean, sometimes I think the worst side of the UK is we still have what I call the Oxbridge Brigade, the Cambridge and Oxford people that actually sort of, I mean, I'm not saying they control television, but that's where they all come from. So when I started out, I was a sort of South London working class boy, so I didn't even know how I could do it, how I could get into it. So I studied my training as an actor first. But so in a way, you know, that I was a work, you know, we, and there were funding for us and there was grants at that time, and now there isn't. So people have to pay for their own, you know, students have to find it's a real fight to get into the industry, and that's a real shame. So I think whatever's happening, not just women, just to do with young kids and young people, the more opportunity we can give them to actually, you know, explore the industry, the better, and the easier we can make it we should do, and we have a lot to give back to everybody, I think. And women, I think, have always had a really hard time with it, and I think women are funny, and I think Maxine's a fantastic actress, and I think Maxine wants to direct her own film soon, and she's writing stuff, and, you know, she's exploring it. But I mean, because she's successful, she can do it. There's a lot of people out there that are writing fantastic stuff that just need to be encouraged, and whether they're women, whether you know, whatever race they are, they should be encouraged, and wherever they come from, they should be encouraged. That's my platform about it. I knew how hard it was for me to start and try, and I had to earn a living. That's what I had to do. You know, it wasn't just like I could do this as a sort of a hobby. It was how I earned my, you know, how I could keep my kids going to school and keep the wolf from the door, as we say.
Yes. So for everyone listening, Funny Cow releases in Australian cinemas on the 26th of July. I recommend it for everyone. It is a powerful film. It's an important film. It's an educational film. And Adrian, once again, congratulations to you on the movie. And hopefully we get to see some more film material from you down the line.
Thank you.